This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hello and welcome to the Farm Traveler Podcast. I am your host, Trevor Williams, and this is episode 183, and we are talking all things bison, starting a farm store, and the mental health struggles of farmers and ranchers. So on the show today, I am interviewing David Norluse from Copper Flats Bison Company in Wyoming, Ontario. So in the interview, David and I are going to talk about his background, how he got into raising bison, the popularity of bison meat, and kind of how the past 5 or 10 years it's really kind of exploded, and how he and his family opened up a farm store. And they've been working with local chefs and local restaurants to build a whole lot of rapport with the community to get people interested in coming to their farm and trying their meat, and how they tried a really cool thing called a Christmas tree toss, where people could take their Christmas trees after Christmas, throw them into the field with the bison, and the bison would, you know, scratch on them and munch on them. So I thought that was really cool. That's a very interesting way to engage with the community, to have a cool event like that. And then David and I will also talk about some mental health struggles that he sees in agriculture, in ranching, and kind of a lot of the tools that are slowly but surely being more readily available to farmers and ranchers. So this was an awesome interview. Check out David and his family at Copper Flats Bison Company at all of the links below. And of course, if you want to see clips of today's interview, if you want to see a bunch of other cool content we have, like farm tours and all that good stuff, be sure to go over to our YouTube channel, which is also linked below in the description, and you can see all those videos, clips from our interviews, and everything Farm Traveler related. So without any further ado, enjoy this episode with David as we talk all things bison, starting a farm store, and mental health in ag. All right, well, David, welcome to the Farm Traveler Podcast, man. Super excited to chat with you.
Thanks.
So we've actually not really met before, but, you know, we did a reel a couple of months ago talking about bison farming, which I thought was really cool. Yep. I always am like, you know, I don't know. I think it's just so cool and classic to see like a beef ranch. I mean, does it ever kind of get old walking out there and just seeing all the bison out there?
No, not really. That's pretty tough.
I bet. So how exactly did you get into it? I mean, you're in Canada, you're in Wyoming, Ontario, not Wyoming, yep. United States. Yep. So yep. How exactly did you get into bison ranching?
So I grew up on a farm. I actually still farm like full time with my brother and my dad, actually, and some extended family as well, but we're kind of starting to separate that a little more. So I grew up on a beef farm, so I was familiar with large animals, I guess. But there was a bison farm around the corner from us growing up, and I thought they were the coolest thing ever. So that kind of started the addiction, and I kind of always thought about it a little bit, never really thought it'd be something that that I'd actually do. But then I think I don't know, it was before my wife and I got married. I was talking to her about it one day, and finally she was like, you know what, we should just look into it more. Like, go ahead. So I started looking into it, and I went all the way.
Well, there you go. It's funny how, you know, the wives are kind of, they have such great ideas for us to do, because that's how, honestly, how Farm Traveler started. My wife was like, hey, you know, you haven't taught ag in a while. You're doing something different. You should start a blog. And I was like, okay. So started it. So it's funny how they have great ideas.
Yeah.
So what's kind of the, I know bison here in the U.S. has a very interesting history. I mean, there were millions and millions on the plains. So what's the history of bison look like in Canada? I mean, not only just like wild bison, but also like bison farming in general.
Yeah. I guess it's pretty tied to the state's history. Be very similar. There is some history here in Ontario, like in our province. Although not near, I guess there wouldn't have been near as large a footprint of bison here on the, you know, the Great Lakes area as it was out west. But they still do figure that there were some in this area. So of course, I think it followed, the herd of course moved, you know, they didn't care about the border. So those wild herds moved back and forth. So that's why the history of the animals is really tied to the same, to the American history as well. So I think that's actually where we get a lot of our information from, even too, is sources out of you know, south of the border. They did at one point they did save some herds out west, and that's where we get the I think the only, I don't want to be wrong about this, but one of the only pure woods herds is out west, like wild herds. So as far as I know, at least for Canada, I don't know what the states did, but it's a pretty rich history for both our countries.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those, like, I don't know, you see a bison, whether it's now or, you know, pictures, you just think of like, you know, the historical implications a bison had. I mean, back when we were settling the West, I mean, there were just so many where they literally had trains of hunters like going clearing all the bison. And I mean, I'm sure that had obviously had a traumatic impact on the population. And so it's cool that I don't know. I feel like the last 5 or 10 years, more people have been interested in bison. I mean, what's kind of that time frame been like?
Yeah, I'd say probably the last 5 or 10 years, it's really, really piqued a lot of interest. We actually only started our farm about 5 years ago. Is when we got our first animals to start our herd. So we're kind of in that, you know, latest swing of people coming in. It's pretty interesting. There's definitely been a lot more interest. And I think it's just kind of hit the news a little more, or news, I should say. More people have become aware of, I guess, the benefits of eating the meat nutritionally. So that has really, really helped. There's not near as much stigma that it's a game animal, like that it has a gamey taste. It's become a little more mainstream. And I think part of that is helped by, at least in Canada here, starting to see it in some of the grocery stores even, which you didn't find that too much 5-10 years ago. You probably would find a little bit of it, but, it's become a little more commonplace, here as well.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I feel like the resurgence of it started with Ted's Montana Grill here in the U.S. Do y'all have that in Canada?
No, we don't. No.
Okay. Yeah. There's a couple. There's one in Tallahassee, Florida, and a couple sprinkled throughout the state. And I mean, they're not like a super duper big chain, but I feel like when they started 5 or 10 years ago, people were like, oh, wait, like this isn't super gamey. This is like very accessible. And then it slowly started showing up in stores. And then, you know, kind of like you guys, like you saw that trend, I guess. And then you're like, hey, let's get into bison farming. Like, what was the inspiration behind that? And what was the whole process like of starting from scratch, really, on bison ranching?
Yeah, for sure. I think we saw that growing interest in it. And I think that kind of piqued our interest that, hey, you know, we could have these really cool animals for one and, you know, potentially actually make a viable living by raising them and being able to sell meat, right? So you kind of, in order to conserve the animal, you got to be able to make some money too. It doesn't come from nowhere, so.
That's true. I mean, it's not like you're getting rich by any stretch of the imagination with bison farming or just like regular ranching. So like, did you buy like a couple of calves, older bison? Like, what did that look like managing? And like, also like number-wise?
Sure. So I had a couple of guys close by, or good mentors that I met that were in the bison industry. So they really advised me to start with younger animals. So what I did is I bought 7 bred heifers the first year. They were 2-year-old heifers. So yeah, the younger animals. So they kind of, whatever, they came in and they've kind of settled in, and it kind of creates a good base herd that's used to our area and treats it as home. So I had 7 bred heifers. The next summer I bought a breeding bull, and then I've kind of bought a few more every year since. So we got between 15 and 20 heifers and cows in our cow herd now.
Okay. Yeah, that seems like really, really manageable. I mean, I guess bison always come with the connotation of herds, you know, where you're going to have like maybe 100 or 200 on your farm, but it seems like you have a manageable size.
Yeah, for sure. It's tough here. Our farmland is very, very expensive. We have to compete against growing crops. So we've got some pretty fertile ground here. So to, you know, jump in and have a pasture big enough for 200 head is that doesn't really happen right away.
I bet. Yeah, I bet that would be a little bit easier said than done. What does your raising process look like? I mean, do y'all have like rotational grazing with bison? Like what, I know that's something that a lot of consumers are more interested in now, like, you know, rotational grazing, sustainable ranching. Like what practices do you guys follow?
Yeah, so we're doing a lot of rotational grazing. We basically in the summertime, what it looks like is I give the herd about 1 acre at a time. And okay. I just use a single, we call it polywire, single little shock wire to separate them. And I move them pretty well every other day is how it works for us. And we play with that system all the time to see what works. And of course, they're bison, so they're not quite as easy to maybe contain all the time. There's some herd dynamics that go on that, you know, it can be going fine for 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden it's like every day they're hopping that little fence and moving to the next piece of grass. It was kind of funny. I was just talking with another bison rancher, and he was asking us about that too. And I kind of said, you know, I tried to like prescribe that I wanted them on there for 3 days. Well, certain times of the year, it's like after 2 days, they're all hopping the fence. So we've all said, well, that's kind of, we should probably just take that as a sign that they know better and it's time to move. And maybe we should just move them.
They're looking for the better grass. They're trying to tell us, but they can't communicate it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do beef cattle really do anything like that? Or is that kind of really like a bison trait?
I think they do a lot of very similar things. It's just, I'd say a lot of that is, I guess bison are just more wild yet, so they have a lot more of that natural instinct, and I think it comes out a little more, it's a little more obvious. Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess beef cattle have been domesticated for a little bit longer, so I mean, you think bison kind of still have that wild tendency a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I think I see it even when we're handling them, like when we have to bring them in the pens and that sort of thing. Growing up with beef, yeah, you learn a lot of low stress handling techniques. And a lot of people told me, "Oh, don't treat them like beef. Like you're going to hurt yourself if you forget that they're not beef." And it's true. They're very much the same in how they act, and what they'll run from and pressure. Like when you where you put pressure on them. But I usually say with beef, you know, you can be within 10 feet of them and they'll move. Bison, you got to like triple that.
Really?
Yeah. So I just find they're very much the same, but that wild instinct in nature is so much more there yet that I think they do generally have a better idea when they got to move to better grass and where the better grass is and those sorts of things that kind of has basically been bred out of the beef cow.
That's interesting. I mean, do you think eventually that'll kind of be bred out of the bison, like, I don't know, 50 to 100 years or something?
It definitely could be, if we're not careful how we manage them. I know some ranchers' philosophy is very much to, if any animal needs too much extra assistance, they shouldn't be bred, like their offspring shouldn't be preserved, to basically to keep that wild nature. You know, we don't have to help with calving because they have naturally kept a lower birth weight and they don't really have an issue with it. And we really, you know, you got to put up with a few angry mama cows, but but it's worth it for not having to assist at all, right?
Yeah, that's nice. I mean, it seems like it's just a little bit more hands-off a little bit, especially with the calving, because, I mean, I follow a bunch of ranchers, and, I mean, the calving season is one of the busiest seasons out there, especially if you're managing a huge herd. So that's great that for bison, you can be very hands-off.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely try to leave them alone, like, as much as possible. Just, you know, go out in the morning, count, see if there's a few calves or not, and carry on with your day.
Plus, I mean, you're talking about they're a little bit more wild. I'm sure if you went to go check on the calves, they would be extremely aggressive.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely, there's usually, you know, that is one helpful thing. You don't ever help with them because you can't help them. So you just stay away and let them do it.
just look at a distance. It's like, all right, you guys are doing good.
Yep, carry on. That's right. That's right.
So when it comes to beef, like beef ranching, a lot of the, I mean, it's divided. You get the leather from the hide. You get a lot of other stuff from the organs that go to, you know, medicine, glue, whatever. And of course you have the meat. Like, what do the byproducts look like for bison? I mean, are you able to also sell the leather? What about, you know, the fur or wool, really? Like, what all can you get byproducts wise from the bison?
Yeah, so I mean, really, they're almost the same animal as beef, right? Being a bovine. So yeah, very much the same byproducts. I guess unfortunately, like with the beef world, it's so large that they can supply large markets, right? So with our bison, we do try to find people to, you know, buy the hides, and it frankly it just doesn't happen all the time. I think people have lost a little bit of the techniques and craft to be able to deal with them and tan them and that sort of thing. So, but we do find different people, different times they take them. We have different First Nations groups that will buy the skulls and hides and use them. And yeah, we try to sell most of the, like, you know, different cuts. We try to convince people to be more organ meats and different stuff like that to utilize more of the animal.
Interesting. So is there more of a technique to kind of break it down carcass wise?
No, it's actually quite similar. Like,
really? Okay.
Really, you get basically all the same cuts.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, going off of the cut thing, what about the marbling? Like, is it very similar to beef? I mean, since they're a little bit more wild, like, how does that kind of play into a part of it?
Yeah, so you won't see the same grading charts as you would with beef. Oh. Like, you know, you won't really get your triples and primes and that sort of thing. Or I guess you guys have prime and choice and select in the States, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. In Canada, we call that, like, we have a single A, double A, and triple A.
Okay.
Yeah, so you don't really see those. The grading charts would be different. Bison are extremely lean. So there's not a lot of intermuscular fat or marbling. However, depending on how they're fed and if they're finished well, they can have some decent fat in there. But I found, growing up with beef, you can get some insanely good flavor out of a really well marbled beef ribeye, right? These are much leaner, but I was blown away by the amount of flavor that's actually in there. It's incredible. Far more flavor, I would say, than lean beef.
And really?
I think that comes a little bit from, I'd say, slower growth, more age.
Okay.
I think some of that plays into that. And then, maybe more of a diverse diet. But that all depends on how they were fed too, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, like grass-fed versus grain-fed. I mean, so you talked about the age and the slow growth of them. Like, what, I mean, from time they calve until they're processed, like, what's that age difference there?
You're between 2 and 3 years, depending on how they're fed.
Okay.
Yeah. If they're fed more grain, you're going to be on the earlier end. If they're fed, strictly grass-based, you're going to be pushing a lot farther.
Okay, yeah, that's a lot different than I think like here in the States, the standard is like 18 months, like around that for like a typical beef cattle.
Yep, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. And I'm sure that slower growth that's really interesting that really plays into it, because I thought it would be very, very similar. But that extra 6 months or that extra year and a half would include that, would make that big of a flavor change.
Yeah, I actually heard that from a guy that was teaching beef grading, and he was talking about the color of the meat. You get that really, like bison meat, when you'll get that really deep, rich red color. And he said that does, basically, you'll see that in some beef, like you'll see that a little more in grass-fed beef, and that he said that does, it's some with diet, but a lot of that has to do with the age of the animal that actually produces more of that.
Oh, interesting. And so, I don't know if you mentioned it yet, but do y'all do grass-fed or grain-fed or both?
We do a bit of both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We do some grass-fed, and it's, they receive kind of, I'd say, a pretty low amount of grain. They get a bit of grain at the end to help finish. They're not like you could never finish a bison like you do a grain finished beef. Mm-hmm. Essentially there too, that it hasn't been bred into them to be able to handle those kind of diets. So.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's wild, but yeah, I mean, it makes sense because they're still not as domesticated as beef. They're still used to that grass diet. I mean,
yeah,
that's what they were eating for thousands of years over on the plains. Yeah. I mean, that's what they're accustomed to really.
Yeah. And in the beef world, you know, for years and years, they selected the animals that just ate and, you know, gained well. And okay, well, that one eats a lot of grain. Well, we'll breed that one back. Whereas bison haven't had that done with them up to this point. And they will actually, you know, their stomach hurts, they'll stop eating. It's kind of interesting. Our cattle nutritionist for our beef farm actually did a lot of research with bison as well at West. And he said they did a big research trial, and he said, you know, bison would eat something one day and go, oh, my stomach hurts, and they wouldn't touch it for a few days. He said, whereas the beef, it was like, you know, they get an upset stomach and they just think, oh, I got to eat more. So they'll go back and just keep eating. And yeah, they grow faster that way, but their stomachs aren't settled, whereas bison won't do that. They'll self-regulate themselves more.
That's interesting. And I mean, they also have four stomachs, correct?
Yep.
Okay, that's weird that they have that instinct that's so different. That's like, you know what? I'm going to wait. I don't need to eat right now. I have an upset stomach. I'm going to wait and then eat later.
Yeah. They definitely associate certain foods and tastes, and they link them back and say, nah, I don't really want that. Or I'm only going to eat a little bit tomorrow, you know?
That's wild. That's cool. I mean, it's so interesting how they're so similar to beef, but also very, very different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. So I'm trying to do more cooking stuff with Farm Traveler. You know, I'm trying to connect farmers and ranchers with consumers, and now trying to show consumers, like, you know, what you can do with those products. So what are your favorite, maybe lesser known favorite cuts on a bison, and then like your favorite ways to prepare them? Ooh. I know there's probably a lot.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, my two favorite definitely have to be, I know most people like ribeyes. I love strip loin steaks.
Really? Okay.
Yep. I love a good bison strip loin. My second favorite thing, I think, would be to actually homemade burgers.
Ooh, I bet that's really good with bison.
Yep. I love it. A little bit of paprika, Worcestershire sauce in there, some stuff like that. It's just phenomenal.
That sounds really good. I had Honest Bison on the show about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And they sent us some ground bison with heart in it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really interesting. It was sweet. The guy, Sean, he's like their founder. He told me, he's like, it's going to be a little bit sweet. It's going to be a little weird. But I had it. I was like, oh, my God. It is just a little bit of sweetness there. But it's really good.
Yeah. I'd say bison in general, I usually describe it as having a little sweeter taste than beef. But yeah, you talk about the heart thing. We do that once in a while just at home here. We'll take either heart and or liver and just chop it up like really fine and throw it in with our ground when we make like tacos and stuff. And it's a great way to eat the liver and stuff. And you don't really taste it once you blend it in with the taco and ground, like with ground meat and the taco seasoning. And yeah, it's awesome.
That's really cool. Yeah, I follow Meat Eater on Instagram and they shared, I mean, they were showing it like with deer wise, but I mean, you can definitely do this with beef or bison, but the lady made heart tacos and it looked like pretty good. She just like butterflied the heart a little bit to where it just looked like a steak and then you cut it up and fry it.
Yep.
It looked pretty good. I definitely want to try that. I also want to try beef tongue tacos, and I'm sure, I mean, is bison tongue a good thing to have too?
Yeah, it's almost identical to a beef tongue, really. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I looked up the recipe and it looks like, I mean, you know, you think about eating tongue and you're like, and that's going to be weird. But the way you boil it, you remove the skin and then you cut it up and fry it. It looks really good. And you wouldn't know what it is, like if it's in a taco or something.
Yep. And I've even had it, some people prepare it like that, you know, boiled it and salted it and stuff. And they just slice it up and have it as a cold cut with cheese and crackers. And it's phenomenal.
Oh, that does sound really good. Now, I mean, you don't do anything like super crazy like Liver King where you're eating some raw bison liver or anything, right?
No, I haven't gone there yet.
That might probably be good for, smart.
Yeah, it might be good for a few views.
You never know. I mean, right now, I mean, because, you know, he got busted for steroids, like everybody's posting Liver King stuff online because, you know, they're getting thousands or millions of hits, but that's funny. So you guys also opened up a farm store. Like, tell us, like, what was the inspiration behind that? Why'd you do it? And how's it been so far?
Yeah, so I think that was kind of all, that was the goal all along when we got Bison. We wanted to, I guess, direct market our product here. For us, where we are, it's actually one of the only avenues we can sell meat is selling it ourselves. There's no, I guess there's no larger commercial market here in Eastern Canada. If you go out west, they do, but here we have none of that. So we actually have, if we want to sell anything, basically, we have to direct market it all.
Okay.
So it was always kind of our plan. My wife actually didn't grow up on a farm, so she was really interested too in tying together the bit of the agritourism and education thing. So that, I don't know, it's kind of fun. It gives us that opportunity to talk to other people, share what's going on, and show them a little bit of farm life. So yeah, we started, couple years back, we started actually selling. We were just selling out of our garage. Had a freezer and a little room set up in there, and COVID hit, and it was quite busy, and we were getting a little cramped in the garage. So we decided to branch out a little bit.
That's awesome. Yeah, what was COVID's impact? I mean, did you guys have? I mean, were like, I don't know how it went in Canada. Like, were you guys locked down, and then people slowly came to the farm store? Like, what all was that experience like?
Yeah, we definitely were. We were locked down pretty tight for a while, but that didn't really affect farm stores. It kind of fell under the same area as grocery. So we were allowed to stay open. So yeah, like I said, we were working out of our garage at first. And then, I'm trying to remember what year it is. Be 2021 is when we built the store. Yeah, so that summer, things had relaxed a little bit. We were definitely still under some COVID restrictions. But we were able to build our store and we got it open in the summer and kind of went from there. COVID definitely helped our sales. People were looking for something to do, so we were offering a place that they could come, they could bring their kids and explore around a little bit and see something. So, yeah, it was great.
I bet. I mean, especially like being locked down. We had the same thing here in the States where after the lockdowns like sort of ended, like people wanted to get out. And so one thing that was booming was agritourism. Like people wanted to get out and do stuff and support locally. And they're like, hey, here's a farm. Let's go tour it. And so I think that's been a huge bright spot that's happened because of COVID, which is wild to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. One fun thing was the last January, we did our first annual Christmas tree toss. So people it was a lot of fun. What we did is people could bring their real Christmas trees to the farm as long as they brought some canned goods for donation to we call it the Inn of the Good Shepherd. So they could bring canned goods as a donation, and then they could drop off their Christmas tree, and we would toss some to the bison. And really all they do is play with them. They use them as a good scratching post and toss them around as good entertainment. And then the rest of the trees, we had a tree service company come in and they mulched them all, and we'll use the mulch around the farm here for some bedding and composting and that sort of stuff. So people got to recycle their tree, and we raised a bunch of foods for the soup kitchen, and people came out and had a good time. And the first year we did it was awesome because we had Christmas, and I think about 5 days after Christmas they put us into complete lockdown again. But yeah, we were able to stay open, and it was an outdoor event, so people had a great time coming out, and we continued that on this year, and it was another great success this winter again. So,
That's cool. I mean, that's huge. I mean, I'm here in Panama City, which is kind of like, you know, kind of urban a little bit, but we don't have anything like that for our Christmas trees. Like, we just put it by the road and the dump truck picks them up. I mean, that would be so cool. That's such a cool thing. You saw an opportunity and you took it. Like, people need to dispose their Christmas trees. We need some mulch. Let's get people to visit the farm. That's a win-win-win. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's great time. We have somebody come out and make some food, and he sells some lunch and drinks, and it's lots of fun.
And I mean, also like partnering with the food bank. I mean, bringing some canned goods. It's a great way you guys are helping out the community in an additional way.
Yeah, yeah, no, it went really well and was really well received by everybody. So we're gonna keep trying to do that every year.
That's awesome. And so I imagine, hopefully that's brought up like a steady customer base for the farm store. I mean, do you guys have those like, you know, pretty set customers that come in once or twice a week or something like that?
Yeah, definitely. So we're actually only open we're only open 2 days a week.
Okay.
But that's worked well for us so far. You're kind of constrained by the amount of labor you have. So we've made it work. And we definitely have our regulars. And then those sorts of events really bring out the new people. The ones that, you know, get lots of people, I've been meaning to come by for so long, never did it yet, and finally saw this. So, no, it's really good. And like you said, it's a great community building time, and lots of people see their friends there. And, it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fun to have those experiences, I bet, where, you know, the word of mouth helps it travel. Like, you have those fun experiences, like the Christmas tree toss. They tell their friends, they tell their more friends, and then they go to the next event. I mean, are you trying to plan like quarterly events, something like that, where you can have more opportunities for people to come out?
Yeah. We'll see what we do this summer. Last summer, what we actually did is the Saturday of every long weekend here during the summer months, we did a breakfast on the farm. So we had, there's a chef around the corner actually that comes by, and, 1 week he did bison burgers. He did like a bison taco, a breakfast taco. So different things like that. And it's just very casual for a Saturday morning sort of thing on a long weekend. You can come on out, pick up a meal and just tour around the farm, show your kids. So yeah, things like that through the summer to help boost engagement and a little bit of tourism and sales it's a great time.
I bet it is. So speaking of the bison being a little bit wild, are they fans of the people that come to visit on the farm? Like, how are they? Are they skittish at all or what?
Yeah, they're a little skittish. You'll see them come up to the fence for a while. Like, they kind of get interested. Usually, you know, sometimes they'll throw some treats, and after a while you can tell they get a little sick and then they just move away. But they definitely get used to it. They ignore it after a while.
They're interested and then become a little bit indifferent, I bet.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Are the calves, are they a little bit too wild to have like for a little petting thing? Like, how is that?
Yeah, I'd say they're almost the worst ones.
Really?
Yeah.
They're just wild.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I think part of it has to do is as they get older, they just learn, I guess, what the danger is and what isn't, but it's definitely the calves get the most excited. The others, Dinner's kind of, like you said, they become a little indifferent to what's going on.
The aggressive ones and then the indifferent ones. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, the little babies are just so cute. I honestly, maybe it's because like right after I followed you guys, I would get reel after reel on Instagram of just bison. And there were just so many like bison calves. There was one, I think it went viral. Y'all probably saw it where this, it was a big bale of hay. And the dad bison walked up, was like trying to destroy it, and he did. And then it cut to another video of like a calf bison trying to hit it, and the calf was like, "I'm trying to be like my dad," but he was like just like barely putting a dent in it.
I do remember that one. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. That was pretty cute. All right, so something else that you wanted to talk about, which I love talking about people like this, is mental health and farming. I mean. There's a lot that goes on a farm. If you're a farmer, rancher, wherever, you know, whatever country you're in, how has it been for you as a full-time farmer and rancher? Like, how has mental health impacted you, and what's your whole idea on mental health and farming?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty huge topic, and I've noticed it for myself too. I guess I haven't had any, I'd say, large struggles with it. I've had, times where I have to step back and really check myself, but I think, it's especially something in this age, and it's become, how do you say it, there's probably been more hype around, you know, farm stores, the Instagram side of farming. And I think, I don't know, it's something we have to be careful with too, right? Social media has been awesome for growing businesses and advertising your business. And yet at the same time, I wish we were never on it. Some days it can be soul sucking just about, right? Like investing so much time and it really can take away, I think, from the real connections that are right beside you, right? We've really noticed that. For my wife does most of the social media stuff. I'm on it too. But if you're not careful, it can just take over, right? And it gets the way of our relationship and our kids. And I think that's huge. And I think we can see everybody else on social media, and people, I mean, they can take some amazing pictures and everything can look so super good and rosy to all of us sitting here on our phones, and it doesn't feel so good about what we're doing. And I think we have to take those checks, and it's all right to check out once in a while. And, you know, we have periods too. We try to really push on online and do a good job of advertising and this and that. And other times we just say, you know what, it's not worth it right now. We just need to slow down, take a step back. Yeah, we'll post a few times a week, but we have to take our time here and check in with our friends and with our kids and our wives and you know, our husbands. And yeah, it's just something that I think can really take over our lives if we're not careful. And yeah, it's one of the tough things, especially when you're when there is a lot of stresses you know, all the work and the financials, and it affects your family so closely that it's easy to check out and live in this alternate reality. And yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Yeah, it's so difficult because, I mean, you know, having a good social media presence can like really boost your business, but then you see people that are doing it different than you. And then like I've experienced this with the podcast, like you see people doing it better and having more success, and you're like, well, dang it. Like, why can't I do that? I mean, I don't know. It's not like, it's not really FOMO, but it's more like, you know, a double standard. Like, you're jealous of their impact. You're jealous of what they're doing, and you're holding yourself to a higher standard. There's a lot that goes on there. And if you, like you're saying, if you don't check out, if you don't take a break from social media, it's going to be bad for you, like mental health wise.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's so crucial. Like you said, you just see other people and you want to keep up with them. But in reality, it's just, maybe it's not exactly the direction you're meant to go, right? You have what you're called to do and responsibilities that you have that don't necessarily allow you to do the exact same things that somebody else does. And maybe you won't have the same measure of success, but maybe your success might come, you know, 2 years down the road, even though you think it should happen now, and you just have to be patient and wait for it.
Mm-hmm. What's that word, patience? That's something I'm still trying to learn, because that's really hard to come by. But no, for real, I mean, you can see so many people online, you know, building businesses and stuff, but rarely do you know the blood, sweat, and tears that they went through to build all that, the time, the, you know, maybe they quit their day job and that's why their content is going up through the roof. I mean, you just never really know. But it's that old expression, like, the grass is always greener. Like,
exactly.
Oh, it looks like they have their life figured out, their business figured out, their social media figured out. Why can't I do that? When in reality, they might be looking at our content and be saying, hey, why can't my content be as good as theirs? Like, they're doing it a different way. It's not better, but it's different. Like, why can't I get to that point?
Yep, that's for sure. Yep, definitely.
Yeah, it's wild. And so, I mean, there's something that I think in Wyoming, in the United States, I think in Montana, they're making more resources available for farmers in terms of mental health. I mean, are there more pushes like that in Canada? Like, what's Canada doing for farmers and mental health?
Yeah, it's definitely become a much larger movement here now too. There's a lot of resources, even Farm Credit here has a lot of, they'll do webinars and seminars and talks on it. I think it's become a pretty commonplace conversation in a lot of the ag organizations. And I think you see more farmers coming out, and that is one big positive upside of social media too, is you see individuals that step out and really become vulnerable on these platforms, and it is a great big help, because they reach a lot of people. So it's got a lot of negatives, but it's got some pretty good positives too.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, there's been a lot more people kind of open about it. I mean, one show I like to talk about is Ag State of Mind. It's a podcast by Jason Meadows. Yeah, he's been covering mental health in ag, which is amazing. And more people are talking about it, talking about their struggles. Because, I mean, unlike, you know, I mean, this happens outside of agriculture, but I would say, honestly, more so in ag, where you've got more family businesses and family farms. And I mean, when you're farming, when you're ranching, and it's a fifth or sixth or maybe 10th generation farm, like, that's a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're not trying to just let down, you know, your employees. You don't want to let down your family, your parents, your grandparents, your siblings, your kids. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And I mean, like, honestly, from a farmer's perspective, how do you step back from that? Like, how do you draw that line a little bit where you've got to, you know, make sure you're working diligently for your family, but also draw that line and just say, you know what, I also need to focus on my family right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely really tough line to draw and about, like, yeah, especially times of year, like when we're planting and harvesting and that sort of stuff, it gets tough. Cause yeah, on one side you say, hey, I got to step back and take time for my family and this and that. On the other hand, yeah, if I don't do this work right now and it rains tomorrow and our crop doesn't get in the ground, well, that's but at the same, I don't know. It's definitely a tough line to draw. And I think it takes discipline to learn and discipline to actually carry out. It also takes some pretty open and honest conversations. Like, with my family right now, we're doing some succession planning for the family farm. Mm. Between my dad and my brother, and I think that really makes you step back and look at all that too, and us being able to have those open conversations with each other about what we actually want and what we think will work, it goes such a long ways. And I think, you know, sometimes we think, oh, that person's not doing what they should do and they're not pulling their weight, I'm doing so much more. You know, when you sit down and actually talk about it, yeah, okay, they've got this going on or that going on, you know, I might have to step up for this period of time or whatever. And it all works itself out if you just actually talk about it.
Yeah, communication is key. I mean, I'm finding that, you know, that's so relatable in any business and any relationship, any marriage. I mean, you know, stuff happens. You might have some assumptions. They might have some assumptions. Like, just communicate. Like, just,
yeah, for sure.
You know, Don't worry about it. Just have that conversation. It might be a little bit awkward. It might be a little bit weird, but you'll come at the end of it much more appreciative and much better for the relationship as a whole.
Definitely. Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so, you know, you seem like you guys have got an awesome business with Copper Flats. You're trying a lot of stuff. You've got the farm store. You've got events. What kind of tools, what kind of brainstorming methods, what kind of like collaborations would you recommend to farmers or ranchers out there that want to try some stuff similar?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think we've found a lot of friends through social media. You gather tidbits of information from different groups. One thing, like, we've got our Ontario Bison Association here, so I got some really good friends in that. So, you know, we bounce ideas off each other. You know, some people do an event and we think, oh, we can bring that here. You know, the friend that did it is, you know, like 4 or 5 hours away. So it's not like we're, you know, like anybody else is going to know we're doing the same thing. And you bring those to your regions or you make them custom for yourself. So yeah, we gathered, just tidbits from here and there and everywhere. But I think one great thing is, like, we've got a chef right around the corner from us, a great guy who loves working with local companies, and he's got his own little restaurant that he started on his farm. He's got a little market garden, and he works out of that and buys some meat from us, and those kind of connections have been awesome, because, like, he's super willing to come out to our events and serve food and get to be creative. Gives him an outlet for some creativity, and works really good with us. So I think some of those, especially for meat, well, and for vegetable farms too, I think making those connections with chefs can go such a long ways, and you can find really interesting ways to collaborate. And one of the events in the summer, we had a little, basically a little farmer's market at the Breakfast on the Farm. Another friends of ours that have a little store in town, it's all home goods, like decoration, that sort of stuff. they reached out and were like, hey, want to just do a fun little pop-up market that day? I said, sure. Found 10 or 15 udders, and they all had, like, everybody came out, and we shared some foot traffic.
Oh, well, that's perfect. And I love what you said about, having some more working with chefs. Like, I think that's so cool because, I mean, having those chefs show consumers, like, what you can cook, what you can
exactly.
do, like, all the countless avenues you can take where, you know, they're not like, oh, I don't want to try bison because I don't know how to cook it. Like, mm-hmm. you go and they're like, oh, there's a chef. He's making bison burgers, bison tacos, like, all this stuff that I already cook just with a different ingredient. Like, it makes
exactly.
it much more, I don't know, accessible to them, which I think is
yep.
huge.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one thing, like, yeah, exactly, with the chefs doing that. That's one thing we try to do, like, sometimes online is just showing people, yeah, different recipes with different cuts. Like, it's awesome that people come in and they want to buy ribeye steaks. Well, there's mm-hmm. a lot more on the animal than just a ribeye. That's actually
yeah,
pretty
true.
Small portion of the animal. So it takes a lot of education to get people understanding that and knowing what they can make with different roasts and shank and different things like that maybe they didn't grow up with, right? That's changed a lot. Our cooking and our family meals have really changed. Getting people just to understand what they can do with all that. Because, yeah, we can't just sell ribeye steaks.
Yeah, true. And, I mean, honestly, you might have, like, an unlimited set of content you can choose from because, I mean, there's so many recipes and so many different cuts you can use. So, I mean, it seems like you have unlimited stuff you can pull from and unlimited inspiration.
Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome. So you guys are Copper Flats Bison. If people want to learn more, if they want to follow you on social media, or better yet, if they're in Wyoming, Ontario, where can they go to kind of find you guys and try your bison?
Yeah, so you can find us under Copper Flats Bison Co. on Instagram and Facebook. Well, you can also find us on Google that way too. You'll get to our website. We do email newsletters as well as for marketing. So if you're on there and are interested, you can sign up for that too. We're pretty visible in those three kind of key areas, and most people seem to be able to find us that way.
Well, perfect. Well, we'll link all that below. And of course, I have to ask because I'm very jealous. How in the world do you have that fiddly fern behind you so big? I tried growing one time and it died like a few months ago, but that one is thriving.
Yeah, you'd have to ask my wife. I have no idea.
All right, I'll have to ask.
It's even winter here.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it's not a fake one, is it? It's a real
one. No, it's a real one. Yep.
I looked them up because I was trying to grow one inside, but it eventually died. Yep. There are YouTube channels that are dedicated just to fiddle leaf ferns, but they have like 200,000 to 300,000 subscribers. I'm like, how? This is apparently a very focused niche, which is hilarious.
Yep. I just know it's like constantly moving around the house. It starts shedding leaves in this corner, it gets moved to another corner and thrives for a while, and then it gets moved somewhere else again. So,
and I mean, those are big leaves to find on the ground. They're like the size of a plate. So you definitely notice it when it's shedding.
That's right.
Well, David, thanks so much for being on, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again to David for coming on the show and telling us a thing or two about bison. I don't know about you, but now I really want to try some bison meat with dinner. Haven't had any in a while and definitely going to have to fix that. So check them out again. All links below will be in the description of this episode. And consider sharing this episode with a friend or family member. Maybe somebody talked about bison. Maybe somebody mentioned it to you before. Maybe they even, you know, I don't know. Maybe they're in Wyoming, Ontario, and they want to go and visit the farm store. Share this episode. That helps us out a ton. The more shares, the more subscribers, the higher we rank on various podcast platforms, and that helps us, you know, get more listeners, get more downloads, and get more people interested in learning where their food comes from and how they can engage with those farmers and ranchers through agritourism, direct-to-consumer products, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, thank you so much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. We'll see you again next week with a brand new episode.